Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. This is the second hour, which is why Grace Baldridge has joined us.
Yeah.
Ben has been nice enough to stick around with his special glass that says host on it.
Mm-hmm. I got it specially. I mean, I was told that it's sort of as we're making a commitment to the future of TYT that the host would get one. I'm sorry.
I don't know
why you guys didn't.
We got hard cut from the special wine. The stemless wine glasses with still, like, you could take that on a run with you. If you really wanted to drink wine and run, there's the grip around it.
Yeah.
People would still know you're a host just having a breakdown.
I think there's a couple of extra guest host ones out.
Oh, okay, good. I'll take a sip out of that.
Yeah, see if you can get one of those. I don't know, I think Francis has that, though.
Yeah. They're being snatched up.
All right, so Grace is in charge of hour two today.
Yeah.
You know, I decided to delegate a little bit.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the right word.
It is.
Right?
Yeah, you delegated.
Yeah. So,
and
do you
thank you. And I obviously came dressed for casual Friday. I realized I forgot. Like, usually I try and bring a collared shirt because my parents watch this. Nope, didn't happen. So today we're just having a casual Friday with two people.
Have you seen my leather jacket?
Jake dresses for the show?
That's what I was thinking. I just need to bring a sport jacket in here with big shoulder pads and I'll blend right in.
And a t-shirt underneath.
Yeah, and a t-shirt underneath it. All right, shall we go, guys?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, a California school district has suspended a high school student after racist images that included nooses drawn around the necks of a black student and a coach appeared on his social media site. So, what's interesting about this is that a federal lawsuit has been filed saying that the district has gone too far. A little bit more about that. The suit filed Monday in San Francisco on behalf of four students accuses the Albany Unified School District of violating students' free speech rights and says the district did not have the authority to suspend the students because the offensive posts were on a private account that had no connection with any official school activity or school account. More about this lawsuit. The lawsuit filed on Monday represents four other Albany high school students, three of them Asian, who say they were suspended after or commenting on the Instagram account or indicating that they liked the post. You know, you click like. It's sort of a mindless thing that people do. Now, how far-reaching can this go? Schools have broad authority under federal law to limit free speech at schools that they consider disruptive, according to First Amendment scholars. But courts have disagreed about whether schools can punish students for off-campus speech that causes disruptions at school, a more likely scenario these days with the reach of social media. So basically, how far can the school district go when a student is no longer in school, but obviously still enrolled in that school? This brings up a larger conversation that I wanted to run by you guys. So people are talking about our liking something. Is it too ambiguous to decide if a student is exercising their right to free speech, which of course they are allowed to have, or if they are making threats against another classmate? Remembering that the post in question did show a coach at the school and another student that was enrolled at the school. So if you like something, if you comment on it, like where is the line here?
Yeah, so I think that when it comes to liking something, it's a difficult question because simply liking something doesn't necessarily tell you much or tell you enough about the intentions of the person. So I'll give you a quick example. So there was a reporter who had written a piece about the icy relationship between Donald Trump and Melania Trump. And Melania Trump's Twitter account, official Twitter account, very briefly liked it. Okay, she had only liked like one other tweet apparently. And then so she briefly liked it and then unliked it. Okay, but he had already gotten a screenshot, put it out there, and everyone was talking about it. And so the reason why I didn't think that it was worth reporting or talking about was because it's very easy to like something or, you know, unintentionally like something on social media. I've done it where I'm like just scrolling through with my smartphone and then my thumb hits the wrong thing. And then all of a sudden I've accidentally liked something on Twitter or I've liked something on Instagram. It happens all the time. So I just feel like, especially with Instagram, right? People have accidentally liked things all the time. So you don't know the clear intentions of the person who liked it. And I think it goes too far if someone had liked something controversial or hateful. when they're not in school, this is after school hours. It's too broad.
That's where I'm coming down on this. It's too broad. We don't really know the intention. What I would liken it to is, let's say that the one student puts on a speech, mm-hmm. which is absolutely hate speech against other students. Because I think the image in question, from what it is being described as, it's not ambiguous. That is definitely a hateful image. But if other students were to attend that speech, mm-hmm. does that in turn mean that they are complicit in this hate speech? And that's where I don't, because that's what liking it is. You're basically showing someone, like, I'm here. You know, when someone says that a loved one passes away on Facebook, people will like it, not being like, yeah, I'm so happy that your loved one passed away, but more like, I'm here, I'm present,
I'm acknowledging you. Yeah.
So to me, it's just these students were acknowledging that their presence, seeing the photo.
On Twitter, it used to be, and I've done it, I used to do it, but I don't do it anymore, but I'm curious whether it's true on Instagram, which I don't really use. Might you like something to be able to refer back to it, like mm-hmm. like you used to.
This is on Instagram.
I know, but there's a section in Instagram where you can go back and see posts that you've liked. So there have been instances where someone has, like, if it's a fashion blogger and she's wearing something that I think is interesting and I want to look into it, mm-hmm. I'll like it just so I can go back and find it. Yeah. So that's the thing. You don't know why someone liked it. You don't know if they intentionally liked it. You don't know what they meant when they liked it. Mm-hmm. And I think it does go too far for, you know, the officials or the administrators at the school to just outright suspend someone or expel someone based on liking a post.
But what about the person who created the image?
Well, the person who created the image, look, the whole reason why, you know, the First Amendment has some restrictions for students in a school setting is because administrators and teachers, educators, need to be put in a position where they keep everyone in that school safe, right? It's for safety concerns. Mm-hmm. And so if this activity is happening outside of school, but it could translate to safety concerns during school hours, I think that, you know, I think school officials do have a strong case to take action against a student who creates an image of someone, you know, in a noose and, you know.
It's super hard.
It is hard.
Really, really, really hard. I don't think that, first, the law is really ambiguous, as you said, Grace. There's a free speech professor at UCLA, Eugene Volokh, who says likes are ambiguous and they could be saying, this is funny, I agree with it, or I don't agree, but I want to stand up for your right to say it, all the things we've been saying. My hunch is that a reasonable court would find that it's far too ambiguous to suspend the students.
Yep. Free
speech, of course, the free speech clause of the First Amendment, that the government can make no law, people can make a law, but schools are kind of the government.
They are the government. Yeah, it's a public school.
It's a public school. So I don't think you can suspend mm-hmm. these kids. And I'm not sure you can suspend the person who created the image, although unquestionably, and I'm torn about that. You could certainly suspend him, I would say. I don't know whether you can expel him.
Right.
To your point, no question that the school can act on it. They can call them in. They have a duty to make sure that the next day a bunch of kids who saw that aren't ready to fight back. And even though I wouldn't be blaming the kids who want to fight back, I'd be blaming the kid who made the post in the first place. But it's a tricky thing, man. And we don't want schools significantly abridging free speech. The question is, of course, what is significant?
Yeah, I think at the very least, this is a case of cyberbullying, which schools should absolutely do what they can to prevent.
Right.
But more and more, we're going to see where do they draw the line when students sort of like something or acknowledge something. And I think that they are right to crack down on online harassment and to show that there will be consequences for this sort of behavior as kids really take on second lives outside of school mm-hmm. online. But as far as what they can do legally, we're gonna see laws change so much, I think, within the next 5 to 10 years about the bounds of what a school can oversee and control.
I'm torn about cyberbullying. I get it. I know why you wanna stop it. You should stop it. I don't know about the punishment. Schools should take an active role in teaching about
it. Treat it like bullying. That's what I think.
I got it. It's just tricky. Bullying is, but what's the correct, the difference is bullying, if you shove someone, we know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. It's either violence or it's extortion. Like,
yeah.
Pay me your lunch money or I will hit you, right? But if it's just insulting them, then we are legislating what's in people's heads. And that is I don't like a slippery slope argument in general. That is a slippery slope when you're letting school administrators decide.
But it's more than what's in your head.
It's more than words. It's way more than words. We started seeing the beginning of this when I was in high school. A girl sent her boyfriend at the time photos of herself in a compromised position, and he leaked them to a website, sent it out to the entire school.
That's an action.
That's not just him making fun of her.
But that's an action. That's a privacy violation. That's an action. I am talking about words. I am just talking about words.
But so that sort of thing leads to words that people are saying. I do think that, you know, there's such a thing as verbal violence. I understand that we need to be clear on what that can be, because physical violence and verbal violence are not the same thing, but they still, in the vulnerable mind of a, you know, hormonal teenager, which we have all been, it can send you spiraling. So I think it is important that we be mindful of the changes.
So let me be clear. I 100% agree with you, and schools have to attack it and deal with it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Yeah.
I don't know about expelling people or punishing the aggressor for what is in their head or what came out of their mouth. Now, we know that free speech is limited.
It's limited on a school campus.
That's a significant difference. But throwing somebody out of school for the things they first for liking it seems like we all kind of agree that that's probably too much. But this conversation, because we all would like there never to be any more cyberbullying and it's important. I worry about school administrators sitting around and determining and whether which words hurt, and the standard will be different in Detroit, and it'll be different in Tuscaloosa, and it'll be different in Omaha, and it'll be different in Los Angeles, and it'll be different in Seattle, and that is troubling and challenging, and I don't know what the results are. Mostly talking about it is probably helpful.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. Solved it.
I mean, it's a tough question.
It
really is.
But these kids get to go back to school.
They do. It's a suspension. Here. It's not an expulsion. Mm-hmm. And like, I think what a student does when school is over is their business, right? At that point, the school officials don't have the right to violate their speech. But if that speech is having, an impact during class hours, and it's violence, you know, directed towards specific students, well, then I think at that point it does make sense for administrators to get involved. The extent to which they get involved is another question, and I honestly feel uncomfortable even commenting on it because I'm not a legal expert. I don't know.
Well, the law this says here the law is ambiguous, and court rulings have been different, and we're working our way through it. Eventually, there'll be some clarity.
I hope so. All right, on to Scientology.
All right.
It's keeping it moving.
By the way, Scientologists can't go to school. That we'd throw that out. That's clear, right?
The law is very clear.
Very clear on that, right?
All right. Scientology facilities in Tennessee have been closed after police found patients who were being held against their will. A little bit more on this. Police discovered these facilities, which were no more than tiny cabins and one double-wide trailer concealed in the wilderness and heavily secured. They described the scenes as a gated makeshift padlock secured externally with a steel latch. The authorities found out about the cabins when a man inside managed to call 911. When police arrived, the man was looking out through a plexiglass window. Sounds like something out of a horror movie. After assessing the scene, the man was taken to an emergency room at a local hospital for care. When police later returned to the cabin and trailer armed with a search warrant, they discovered people hastily packing up and moving out all contents of the facilities. Later on, when they did a full evaluation of the area, they found another patient who was a woman. She's also now been taken into custody. Now, who's to blame for this?
Scientologists.
We solved it. The charged suspects are Dennis Flamond and Hans Snyder Little, who both pleaded guilty to two counts of false imprisonment, and Mark Valliers, who was charged with two felonies of facilitation of kidnapping.
False imprisonment, but I was going to say, I'm glad the kidnapping part came there, but you lock a guy in a place for 9 months, so that's kidnapping.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a really horrifying story. I think what struck me was that apparently these people were called patients. They were being treated and were given some sort of undisclosed medicine for undisclosed reasons. I'm sure something very vague. And they were being held in basically a cabin with a single bed, single sheet, and a bathroom, which was in the facility. It is something straight out of a horror movie.
Now I'm going to back up because they're near the Soren Scientology location. We don't know that these four Scientologists or that Scientologists are doing that. Well, right, that'll have to be
investigated. They're run by the Church of Scientology.
It does say that? Okay. Yeah. All right.
A group of psychiatric facilities owned and run by the Church of Scientology.
Well, they closed that. We don't know that the Church of Scientology
was involved in
the separate locking them up, even though Tony Ortega has reported on these for some time. So we'll find that out. I was just kidding when I say to blame the Scientologists. We'll see what happens. What is true about Scientology is it's not hard, and it's the same thing that was true of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Like, what I don't get and what staggers me about Scientologists, and I get some people have been helped by it, just like some people are helped by a lot of things. First of all, Scientology, as we know, is at war with psychiatry, right? Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to me if they're giving them drugs would seem to be exactly what Scientology doesn't do. So I'm totally interested in finding out more of the story, what's true, what's not, what's being perhaps misreported in the early days. But if you watched Donald Trump from the moment he ran for president, I think a sane, natural person says, that guy's crazy, or that guy is unsubstantial, that guy's not a serious person. You see 2 minutes of 2 seconds of David Miscavige, the Scientology leader, and you're like, oh, he's a lunatic, right? And why would anyone take him seriously? So what's weird is that seemingly stable people, good people, people who we could be friends with, you know, I have no doubt that there are Scientologists who are fun and nice and they go out and they have a good time and they're really great to their friends, but somehow you got tricked. Because this kind of stuff is nonsense. So it doesn't surprise me at all. Tony Ortega, who reported these things might exist, that it turns out they do and that somehow there's value and they think, oh no, we'll lock this guy up.
Well, I think, you know, since you brought up the comparison of Trump and how people were, you know, tricked into thinking that he would look out for their best interests, I think the one similarity that you see between two demographics, the demographic that's bought into Scientology and the demographic that's bought into Trump, is that these are people who might feel like they need some sort of help in their lives, right?
Sure,
and
definitely.
So with the electorate, you know, the electorate that supported Trump, they were tired of a system that, you know, they felt rightfully so, was ignoring them and their problems. And they wanted, you know, a politician that at least said that, you know, sure, he was going to look out for them. And I think the same thing happens with Scientology. I think they specifically target people. I mean, it's huge in LA, and it's particularly huge in LA among people who are trying to be actors and actresses, people who want to break through in the entertainment industry. And I think that they're told that this will somehow help them. And they're looking for help. They're looking for some sort of answer.
Yeah.
And I think that's the similarity between the two.
I'll go with you guys so far on the Trump Scientology comparison. But where this fork in the road happens for me is that when you become a Scientologist at some point in time, you do commit to the idea that aliens were on this planet and died and their souls are buried and were either a good alien or a bad alien, something along those lines. If I'm getting it wrong, it's because it's a super confusing cult and that's on me.
Can I be a bad alien?
Can I be a naughty alien? But the thing with Trump, I think that there are his followers, his believers, if you will, a lot of them were grounded in wanting more real, concrete things. So you were pointing out like actors and actresses in Los Angeles who can kind of suspend their disbelief that maybe if they buy into this religion and this cult that they could have the sort of success that we see from Alex from Orange Is the New Black and Tom Cruise and these other, you know, Leah Remini before she left the church, you know, these successful actors and actresses. Whereas, you know, Trump supporters are like, I just want a job, man. I don't know what to believe. I think that the basis for that belief, there's one that was, you know, if misguided, was based in like real concrete issues, and then in Scientology, there's like this crazy belief system. No matter how you swing
it takes a while for you to get to that belief system. I think
it's true. It does take a while to get to the alien level,
and then you're already like deep in it, right? You've already been held captive,
and you've already given so much of your money. You're like, fuck. I mean, now I will.
I didn't mean that. You guys make great points. I only meant that. my comparison wasn't about the type of people who follow or that there are real similarities between Trump and, I just mean, I look at Trump for an eighth of a second and I'm like, huge fraud. How does everybody not see this? Same thing with David Miscavige. How do you not see that this is a fraud instantly? Not that you wouldn't want the things that the people, I get wanting those things.
Right. But,
and so it's not like the same with other Republicans who would, you know, George W. Bush followers, you could argue, voted against their own interest. But I don't think that it was like, you didn't, well, he's also with him, you were like, that guy's dumb. But
Mandela. No,
but right. I mean, I'm saying my budget man. But it's a different kind of thing with Trump. It was glaring, in a much more glaring way with Trump. And I just don't. I'm still stunned that people, they don't see that. They and I guess it's been true forever. Like
I was going to say, Ben, it's amazing what a charismatic, maniacal, egomaniac of a leader can get people to do.
Yeah, right. There have been preachers since biblical times who have, you know, who other guys walking down the street, look at that crazy guy, and then like, oh no, he's got a following.
Yeah. All right, shall we move on?
Let's take a quick break.
Take a quick break. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about my girl, Kendall Jenner. Thanks, Anna.
You do like entertainment reporting.
I do,
and stuff.
I do. I can't wait to talk about her. So we'll see you after this break.
Welcome back to TYT. I like the spikes.
That's okay. In celebration of Cinco de Mayo. Mike Huckabee right now listening to music like this. Eating Doritos and
Doritos.
No, that was his tweet today.
I dream that I could dance well every night.
I heard you can sing, right? I overheard something about that in the office. I don't know why I put you on the spot about that.
Can you
that.
Not sing? We're not going to ask you.
Can you please sing right now?
Sing.
No.
Are you okay? I mean, you're better than an average person.
I can do a decent Cher impression to one song and one song only.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But now I'm not confident because I heard Edwin do it and I was like, actually, that was pretty much better than mine. So
if I can turn back,
I just
on,
do it. It's love. Yeah. Deep and leaving life after love.
Of course, yeah, I love that song. Yeah,
it's a great song.
It's great. Every
Cher,
pride, I bring it out.
Cher is awesome.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna be like, Cher's a big TYT fan. I was like, what?
No, she's a big guy.
Cher is awesome.
She's a big TCM fan though.
Oh, that's right.
So she's very great.
Super quickest story ever. But I go to, she's coming out a couple years ago to do a. Guest programmer bit with Robert, the host of TCM, the main host who died a couple months ago, and Angie Dickinson, who's a friend of mine, was also there, and I went to see Angie, but Cher was there too, and I saw Angie, and then I was like, well, Cher's here, she was in makeup, I'm gonna come out, and so her door opens, and everybody was, you know, giving Cher the proper space that a
just
super
bowing.
Right, exactly, that a superstar like that. And then so I start to walk up. I'm just gonna say, hi, I'm Ben, I'm the other host, you may not know, you know, whatever, it's such an honor to meet you. And she sees me from like 20 feet away, and she goes, oh my God, I can't believe I'm beating Matt Berkowitz.
That's awesome.
Right,
what?
Right. Yeah. And that's the beauty of hosting on this incredible channel, that you get people who react that way when I'm like, Cher, I'm meeting you. You're not.
Wow.
You're not meeting a cable TV host.
I can hear her doing like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm. That's terrible.
That was
that's
good.
Awful.
That was really good. Yeah.
Never mind.
Cher's awesome.
That is awesome. All right, let's do some TYT Lives. The Mad Lib says being penalized for liking something is thought policing, hashtag 1984. We all agree that the liking goes way too far. Going after people who liked something controversial is too far. Miri says the persons who post it should get in trouble. The people who liked it should be publicly shamed. But again, I don't even agree with that because you don't know what the intention was.
No, you can't.
There's not enough clarity.
And
on
one
it.
Of their complaints, by the way, was that they were publicly shamed. That the school trotted them out, and they were publicly shamed. We don't know what they thought. And getting in trouble, the other people, if they're, I guess, part of the school. But I mean, in general, you get to post that in the world. Like, of course, you get to post it. Like, you can't go to prison for posting a hateful picture. That's not how it works.
Why are people so vicious?
Right, like, that's the problem.
People are just vicious. It's really sad. That's the in my opinion, the heart of the story. Like, what encourages or motivates someone to post?
Yeah.
You know, a black student next to a noose. Like, why would you do that? Where is your head? I mean, when I was in high school, nothing like that ever went through my head. Nothing like that ever goes through my head, period. You know, I just don't know where this comes from.
I don't have good noose humor, though. I never have, you know. So some people are really funny about nooses. No, it's insane. Who would ever do that next to anyone? Yeah. Who would suggest death to even an enemy.
Yeah.
Kids are dumb. That's part of it too.
Yeah, kids are dumb.
Because we're fucking animals. Like at the end of the day, we're animals. Like we're born and we're like these. Yesterday when I got home and I was trying to get home from the airport, right? I get in the Uber and I just kind of sat back and watched all these people trying to get out of the airport. And everyone's like, we're animals, right? Everyone's like switching lanes and cutting people off and it's all happening simultaneously. And I felt like I was in a herd of like wild gazelles. I don't even know, they're in herds sometimes, right?
Sure.
I don't know anything about gazelles, I'm gonna keep it real.
Not a gazelle expert.
Neither am I. But I looked forward toward the Uber driver and I was like, do you see this? We're freaking uncivilized animals.
What, and you think we should all, I mean, I nothing makes me want to leave the airport more than getting into a car. Like, let's go drive, get the F out of the airport.
So I get that. But you know what doesn't help you get out of the airport quicker? Driving like this.
Well, yeah, I mean that's your hands aren't even on the wheel.
Anyway. Yeah, they got to be a 10 too.
I mean, yeah, I was like, Anna, if that's how you're driving, then yeah, it must have been a mess at the airport. Holy shit.
That's
I need a never carpool with you.
All right, we got to just.
All right, let's move on to pressing issues like Kendall Jenner. So Vogue India has received some backlash online for the cover of their 10th anniversary issue. Let's take a look at the cover. Oh my God, it's Kendall Jenner.
I would not know that in a million years.
Well, now you know. And as you can see on the cover, it says an Indian affair. So some people were upset about this. I'm going to tell you why, some of the reactions online. So one Twitter user says, Kendall Jenner is on the 10-year anniversary cover of Vogue India. The few ops brown women have to shine are given to white women. I'm tired. Another person says, even this magazine that's supposed to be celebrating another culture, another type of beauty, is not recognizing even what it's supposed to be standing for. And this one is my favorite. Vogue India, we've completed 10 years in India. Vogue India. We need to celebrate India. Vogue India. Let's put Kendall Jenner on the cover. Now, worth noting about this before we get your input, the photo spreads inside the magazine did feature some Indian faces, including Bollywood actors Sushant Singh, Rajput, I'm sorry I'm butchering that, and Hong Kong-born Katrina Kaif. And the piece was shot by Italian photographer Mario Testino in India's pink city, Jaipur. Mm-hmm. And once again, if we can move past in the comment section all the names that I got incorrect on that, I want to get a response from you guys because generally reading through this, it seems like why would you have Kendall Jenner on the cover? Yeah. I got to agree with the backlash here. It's really very tone deaf.
So usually what happens when someone that doesn't make sense is, you know, prominently featured in something, it's because there's a lot of buzz surrounding that person, right? And there is a lot of buzz surrounding Kendall Jenner. And I get frustrated in the industry that we work in because oftentimes I feel like your credibility doesn't matter, your hard work doesn't matter, your experience doesn't matter, your knowledge doesn't matter. All that matters is the buzz, right? How many clicks did your video get? How much BS, is involved in your social media? How many followers do you have? And all that stuff, it doesn't matter, but people care about buzz because they want to sell their product, right? Doesn't matter how talented you are, how much talent you lack. But with this case, it's weird that they made that decision because Bollywood is huge, right?
Huge.
So huge. And there's so many Bollywood actors and actresses, right? Since it's Vogue and you want to feature a female on the cover. So many Bollywood actresses that would generate a lot of buzz and would, you know, attract many consumers in the country to buy your magazine. So I don't know why they went in that direction. You know, I'm going to be completely honest. I'm not insanely offended by it. I don't think it's a huge outrage, but I do think it was a really curious decision. And I understand why people would be put off by it.
Yeah, I'm not particularly outraged by this either. But then again, we wouldn't be because we are, you know, we are white women.
Yeah.
And so this is something that to us is a little bit foreign, sort of out of our privilege zone, I guess. What I do understand here is that you look to Vogue less so now with the rise of Instagram models, but Vogue is definitely sort of the the pinnacle of fashion success and beauty and creating beauty icons. And so you'd want India Vogue, Vogue India, to echo that and be like, this is the beauty standard for India. And to have Kendall Jenner just directly says that we don't actually really care about that. Let's go back to Western beauty. It doesn't really seem to be serving their readers.
I just feel like beauty standards is an annoying phrase. And I know you didn't mean to use it and try to, endorse it in any way.
I super agree with you about beauty standards.
So, look, I think some of these so-called glamour or fashion magazines sometimes actually do some pretty good work when it comes to, the written content. Sometimes, like Vanity Fair, for instance, every once in a while has a pretty great political article, right?
Teen Vogue recently.
Vanity Fair is not a beauty magazine either. So,
it's not, but they do also have like the beauty and glamour arm of their.
They cover Hollywood aggressively.
That's right, very aggressively. And so I don't want to completely belittle what they do because I think in some cases they do important work. But the part of the magazine that I don't really care for is, can we put a cover up? Like, I get it, it's beautiful and it's whatever. But it's, women don't look like that. And women want people that they can, sure, people that they look up to and maybe wanna look like, but they also want people that they can relate to. And I think the part of these magazines that rubs certain people like myself the wrong way is because it just represents everything that we're constantly pushed to conform to or pushed to be like.
And that said, I think when it comes to representation in the beauty world, which whether we like it or not, and I'm, who I am, it exists and it's very important to many people who get a lot of their self-worth and confidence from beauty and from looking good and fashion and being on trend. It comes down to opportunity. And this is a classic example of an opportunity that could have been given to someone of the culture that would have better represented Vogue India and how far they've come in 10 years. This is their 10th anniversary issue. This is a big milestone for them. And instead, that opportunity went to someone who is, went to the Western traditional style of feminine beauty standards. And that is very much Kendall Jenner right now. And I think it is understandably very frustrating to a lot of their readers.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. They should have made a different decision. But a lot of people are also really angry at Kendall Jenner. Like, they're directing a lot of hate toward her. You think she's gonna say no when Vogue?
Just tell her
anything?
To drink a Pepsi.
Well, yeah.
Cool off with a Pepsi.
Her decision to be in that commercial, or whatever. But she didn't write the commercial. The reality is, she's gonna work, right? And if she gets these offers, she's gonna take it.
Yeah, it's
so
a lot of money.
Be upset with the magazine. Don't be upset with her. I think most people in that position would take
it. Nobody cares what I have to say, so I'll be pretty quick.
I care.
No. I mean,
beauty guru
Ben
Mankiewicz.
I mean, I have zero interest in this. I don't care, and I can't imagine being outraged by this, even from the privileged point of view that we come at. There are other things to get angry about that. They're trying to sell their magazine. She's famous around the world. They put a famous person on. In their defense, when the person who says that, white culture or whatever they said, whatever the tweet you read, sorry. She's actually made to look Indian, right? She's embracing a style, it seems. That is not how generally we see Kendall Jenner dressed. I have no idea whether that counts as, but they shot it in Jaipur and, so my hunch is that if you told me that that was an Indian actress, I would have said, oh, right? I would have believed it. So there is a point at which all of us who are interested in a just world can't muster outrage, and for me, this is one of those. She's the most right now, the hottest, meaning the most click-worthy model there is. So if you can get her, and it exposes your Indian-focused magazine more, I'd take her. I get it. I get that. I see why people are upset, but I'd let it go.
There is also this issue that. Look, one of the reasons why people are so buzzworthy is because they're constantly the ones that are chosen to be featured, right? Sometimes people become buzzworthy because they finally get the opportunity to be featured in something, right? And so that exposure helps. And if we have like this Like it's a cycle, and the cycle is, okay, here's a person who has a famous family, we're gonna feature them, and then they get buzz from that exposure, and then that buzz generates more buzz because totally. They're like, oh. So it kind of like squeezes people out that are talented, that do wanna be represented. And again, I think a lot of people feel like they're not appropriately represented in mass media in general, right? And so if Indian girls or Indian women are, you know, turned off by this cover, I can totally understand why.
Yeah.
Do you think in 2027, mm-hmm. 10 years from now, we will know where Kendall Jenner is and care?
I think in 2027, there is some possibility that, you know, she'll have like a daughter and she'll be like 2, which in their family is old enough to put her in a bikini. And then we'll be talking about, you know, the modeling prospects of that 2-year-old. I think that's what's gonna happen because we are in a country, in a world full of sheep that love focusing on BS like that. I think that's what's gonna happen.
So I only bring this up because she was so good in The Night Of and I could not stand any scene that she was not in. And she's not Indian. She's born to Sri Lankan parents and grew mm-hmm. up in London. But Amara Karan, who I thought was Indian until I just looked her up and it turns out she's Sri Lankan, should be on the cover of every magazine.
Indian women are beautiful. Like, so,
drew me to her and not was the fact that she's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. She's so good. She's such a great actress, and I just want to see her more often.
Okay.
And so.
See, and maybe she deserved.
Yes. Yeah. There we go. Now I'm outraged.
Yeah. Okay. You should be outraged. By the way, you know what I also don't understand? You know who else was a great actress, and I feel like I haven't seen much from her.
Jennifer Aniston.
No. She's fine, but I mean the, you know, Slumdog Millionaire. I'm forgetting the actress's name.
Actress. Yeah, of course. Right, I can't remember either.
Super talented, incredibly beautiful.
Frida Pinto.
Yeah. I love her. Anyway, let's move.
All right, let's move. Let's move on. So we have about 6 minutes, so we'll get through this next story pretty quickly. Has to do with Uber. Uber is potentially facing a criminal probe over a software that it allegedly used to evade authorities. So the U.S. Department of Justice has begun a criminal investigation into Uber Technologies Inc.'s use of a software tool that helped its drivers evade local transportation regulators. Uber has acknowledged the software known as Grayball helped it identify and circumvent government officials who were trying to clamp down on Uber in areas where its service had not yet been approved. So Uber has actually admitted to a lot of this. In a letter to Portland authorities, they said that they did use this Grayball technology, but they used it exceedingly sparingly and only before the Uber app was allowed to be used in the Portland area in around 2015. Now the investigation is still in its early stages, but Reuters reports that Uber received a subpoena from a Northern California grand jury seeking documents concerning how the software tool functioned and where it was deployed. One person familiar with the request said, "That indicates a criminal investigation is underway." The second source confirmed that was the case. Now, in a blog post, Uber said that they use this technology actually to prevent fraud and protect their drivers from harm in the early stages of the app. Now, that's what they are saying. However, the system might have gone farther than suggested by Uber's terms of service for app users. For example, it mined credit card information to see if the owner was affiliated with a credit union used by police and checked social media profiles to assess the likelihood that person was law enforcement. Uber said it used the Grayball technology in December 2014 while it was operating without approval because it was deeply concerned that its driver partners would be penalized financially or otherwise for their driving. So here's what I'm hearing.
It's the first time they were ever worried.
Some people
about
are saying,
drivers.
Hey, what's the big deal? They were just trying to grow their business in cities where it was not yet approved. There's no harm there. They're not doing anything. This is a business decision. And other people are saying that this is just sort of a likely indicator or symptom of a company that many now feel engaged and shady business practices. Where do you guys fall on that? Do you buy any of what Uber is saying?
No.
This is just,
no.
Okay.
I feel like it's clear as day that they're lying and that, you know, they wanted to evade the laws and the fact that, you know, certain municipalities just didn't want them, right? They just didn't want them. And you have to respect those laws. The part of it that drives me nuts is just this like brazen attempt to evade those laws.
Yeah.
And then like this half-hearted, unconvincing excuse that they give, you know, in response to it. I'm glad that the Department of Justice is investigating.
Yeah, I mean, they push and they push and they push and they push in San Francisco and they've pushed in other places and they continually do it. And eventually they're going to get a serious criminal investigation. I don't know if this is the serious criminal investigation. I find it hard to believe that this Justice Department is going to be the Justice Department to crack down on Uber. Nor do I particularly want Uber cracked down on, except where they sort of deliberately break the law and then just irritate us by not admitting it, you know? And there's a way, of course, they already, by the way, they're now approved in Portland, right?
So, yeah.
So there's a way to do it. You lobby. You keep at the city council until you get the approval that you're seeking to drive. And until then, you don't do it. What's incredibly alarming, and I'm you know, late to this game, is the depth of how many apps are there that lets someone else know everything about me. Mm-hmm. Like that they are able to tell the credit card is from a credit union used by cops. We're not going to pick that person. Like that's the alarming part of this. I mean, Portland taking a stand because it's a super liberal city and not wanting Uber. And eventually, of course, they let it in because guess what? Liberals want to get places cheaper too and in cleaner places. So eventually they approve it because it's a great, great, great service. That's why it's valued now at $68 billion. That's what its valuation is. That's staggering. So I get all that. What is terribly alarming is how sophisticated this is. I mean, these guys are so good.
And how far they went to not get caught and how they're still covering up their tracks. And this is just a number of many Uber controversies that we've reported on here, I know, within the past month. That have sort of caused their chief executive to admit that he said, quote, he needed leadership help.
But look,
this is coming from the top down.
But look, we also need legal help.
But also, look at it. I mean, it is in many cases that, you know, I don't want to oversimplify things, but they are extremely aggressive. Right? Mm-hmm. Portland says no. They're like, no, let's go into Portland anyway. Mm-hmm. We'll give them a different app if that shows up as a, if we think they're affiliated with law enforcement or the Department of Transportation or anything in that way. And let's just do it anyway. And they keep pushing and they keep pushing. They have pushed everywhere. They push wildly in Europe, right? In places that really stood out. India, right? I believe, to go back to talk more about India. And look what has happened. It works. It works. They fought the law and Uber won every step of the way. They're valued at $68 billion. It is a sign to where we live in a world where Trump declares victory, right? Just say he holds a big press conference after the House votes, even though the Senate's not likely to approve it, because he's like, win, look what I did. I'm Trump, I win. All he cares about is winning. All Uber cared about was winning. And the fact is, if that's all you care about and you're hyper aggressive, sometimes it really pays off. And there's a distressing reality to that.
Yeah. All right, we gotta go, but that was it for the second hour.
Yes, thanks for watching, guys. Thanks to Ben and Grace, and we'll be back next week. Have a good weekend.